First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, now that's a theme song. My name is Bill Simmons. As you just heard, we've made some big changes starting this week. Not only did we change the name of the show to the BS Report, we recruited YouTube star Ronald Jenkins to write the new intro for us. If you're not familiar with Ronald's work, a reader recommended him 2 months ago, and I've been hooked ever since. In fact, I tried to legally adopt him last month, but he turned out to be too old. But what a song. You know what? Let's hear that theme song again. Can we cue that up? Oh. You have to admit, this is pretty good. I like how it has a couple different levels as it goes along. This is like the intro level. Gets you in the mood. Now it starts climbing. Now he adds a little extra here. Here it comes. He's going to scream out here. Yeah. That is good. That's really good. In fact, I think he could be the Jan Hammer or the Harold Faltermeyer of our generation. I'm really hoping. What he needs is a hit series along the lines of Miami Vice where he could just write songs like this. Anyway, that might be my favorite sports intro since the old NBA and CBS music. And you can check out all of Ronald's stuff at www.ronaldjenkins.com. Thanks again. Let's get to this week's guest. He's been in charge of my favorite league since 1983, and he's much smarter and much quicker than me, so there's a good chance I might get destroyed during this interview. David Stern, please be easy on me, and welcome to the show.
It's a very gentle day in Cleveland.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Because I was worried, because when you went on Dan Patrick's show last month, you know...
I've known him longer than I've known you. Dan and I go back to... when I first became commissioner, I think it was like the first day or the second day, he had me on his as a guest on CNN. It was a very important show. It was the Sunday night CNN, I think.
Wow.
And which was unimportant at the time, and with no viewers. And he went out and asked the man in the street if they had ever heard of David Stern. Oh, yeah, he's a radio host. He's a violinist. I treasure the memory. So Dan and I go way back.
Okay, good. Well, we're taping this on Thursday afternoon before Game 4 of the Finals. So I had to ask. We always hear that it's terrible for the league to have a short NBA Finals. Honestly, do you care? Like, how much money is really lost?
Well, not a lot of money. I think I care. It's better for our broadcast partners if they get a couple of more games. So they have more inventory to sell. But right. The reality is that from an NBA perspective, it just goes into the record books as sort of a, you know, to remember that there was a harsh confrontation that a team that wins four in a row won, period. Right.
Well, the last time I interviewed you, you said something interesting. You said that during big games, you have trained yourself not to root for either team, that you just root for a great game and for nothing to go wrong. So what happened when you were watching LeBron in Game 5 of the Detroit series? Like, you had to get a little caught up in that, right?
Oh, you do. I mean, you say, holy gamoly, look what he's doing. Is he really doing it? Where's he been hiding that? And what range he's developed and what a good shooter he's become. That's different than a rooting interest. That's just admiring beauty in our game. And he really had some performance.
And you need, you know, for the next generation, you need one of these guys to really become the Tiger or the Roger Federer of your sport, because that just makes it more interesting, right?
It does, but really, when you need people, you need a lot of good people. You know, what people forget is that, you know, you look at the Celtics of Bird, and, you know, we had a whole Hall of Fame team playing against the Hall of Fame Lakers, playing again. Then Isaiah came along, and the Trailblazers had Clyde and, Stockton and Malone were walking the land. And so Michael was proving himself against some pretty extraordinary athletes. So it's not about, you know, the one who goes to the top is the one whose team wins.
Right.
And if he doesn't have sort of other great players, two or three on a team, to play against, he doesn't get the same measure. So I've been so excited from a basketball perspective when I look at, you know, that class of LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Carmelo, all of whose teams made the playoffs this past year. And then I look at a Chris Paul and then look at Oden and Durant coming in, and then at a time when we've still got Shaq and Kobe and Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan and the like. I just think it's it can never be a one-man show. The league will not do well on a one-man show.
Right. And, you know, you brought that up about how good the talent's been lately. I do think it compares to what happened in the mid-'80s as Bird and Magic were ending kind of their reign, but you had all these young guys coming in. Now, I think the best thing that you've done this decade, which I hated when you did it, but now I have to admit it worked, was this rule that the high schoolers can't jump right into the league. And it generated so much interest for Oden and Durant coming into this league. I mean, you just have to be so excited how that worked out, right?
I'm happy that it worked out that way. It wasn't why we did it. It's kind of interesting. We did it because draft picks are now so valuable that the opportunity to see a kid play against the next level of competition and under the glare of the NCAAs and under an extra year of coaching allows you to make a much more intelligent judgment. Now, I suppose you and I could agree that in the case of Durant and Oden, all it proved is what the scouts were saying when they graduated high school.
Yep.
But there might be others, including some who didn't come out after their freshman year because they learned by taking the next step that they weren't so good. Yeah. But you are quite right. Everybody knows Durant and Oden in a way they wouldn't have known them if they had come out right after their high school.
And they earned the hype a little bit, whereas you had some of these guys coming out of high school who hadn't really done anything yet, and they're being handed all this stuff. And
yeah,
these guys
Listen, if they turn out to be as good as they are, I don't begrudge them the money. It's really, I'm really looking to see whether a team is going to use a very valuable draft choice without really understanding. I'm thinking about the young man who played for Minnesota, Eby.
Oh, Ndidi Eby?
Yeah.
Right.
He was a high draft pick, you know, and he was gone.
Yeah.
And if he had played a year, he actually had come back and he played in our development league. If some of these kids who have been washed out had played an extra year, you know, one of two things would happen. Either they would get better and they would be drafted, or they would decide that they weren't quite that good and they would play at the collegiate level and grow and be better and ultimately be NBA players. But in the case of Oden and Durant, you know, shades of Carmelo Anthony and the Final Four with the NCAA victory. I think it's a terrific opportunity for them to get the pressure, the experience, and the exposure, and it turns out to be a good thing for the colleges and for us.
Right. Well, now you brought up the lottery. What are we going to do about the tanking? Have you decided how to address this? Do you have any ideas? Are you going to address it at all? What do you think you're going to do?
You know, we're having trouble because we can't generate a lot of enthusiasm for a change.
How come? Who's not generating
because,
the enthusiasm?
Because actually, I guess if you think there was tanking, did it benefit anybody?
No, and I think that was the irony of this whole situation, is that the teams that tanked the most egregiously didn't get anything out of it.
Well, I would never agree that our teams didn't play to their fullest abilities, but...
Well, I have to disagree.
I've read you. I'm a faithful reader of your various writings, and I don't have a good answer. Dan Patrick just suggested that we should have the two worst teams play each other.
Hmm. I had a whole thing about creating a tournament. Like you cut down the number of teams that make the playoffs from 16 to 14 or 12, and then you have a tournament right at the end of the season for the last two playoff spots, because that would ensure that nobody could shut down Paul Pierce or Michael Redd or Ray Allen. You know, their fans wouldn't allow it because they're paying full price, right?
Right.
So you think that could work or no?
You know, I don't have a good answer. Obviously, we have failed to satisfy you with a variety of things we have done. and I'd like to satisfy you, and I just don't think that we have achieved it yet. Remember, the lottery, it didn't start out. You know, as you've shown your fans, there was the famous envelope lottery.
Yes.
And then we had a lottery with, I think, 64 ping pong balls, and then we manipulated the number of ping pong balls to make it a little bit more likely that teams who did well, who did poorly, got the best pick. I don't think there's a good answer.
I think there's one easy fix you could do. I think instead of having the lottery for the top three picks, you just do top two. Because then nobody could slide lower than two spots than they should have been. You know what I mean? Like maybe that would work. I don't know.
You're just saying that to protect the teams that don't win it. That's not about your allegation of tanking. That's just about sort of the potential unfairness of a team not getting a good pick. Because we used to have the first year, it was 1 through 7.
So I love that. The envelopes. You just pulled them out. You pulled out the envelopes, and that was that.
Right. And that was so that if you were 7, even if you had the worst record, you could still come in 7.
Yeah.
And that and in retrospect, that wasn't so fair either.
But, I mean, you say that I had an allegation of tanking. Like, you have to admit, like, the Celtics are playing Sebastian Telfair and Alan Ray in the fourth quarter of these games. Like, it's not like they're intentionally missing shots or whatever, but they're putting the worst players they can put out at key times of the game. And meanwhile, you have people like my dad who are paying $350 for two seats who are sitting there watching Sebastian Telfair and Alan Ray. Like, I just feel like that has to be fixed, right?
Well, maybe I have to be a better commissioner in encouraging our teams to take better care of their season ticket holders.
Yeah, I do. You know,
but it's a very sensitive subject because, you know, telling a coach who he plays.
Yeah.
How to test, you know, because in some cases players, you know, you're out of it. You know, you've got some young guys. You want to see whether they make it or they break it, and you put them in there and you put them under pressure.
Right. And yeah, you know, the other thing you could do maybe is with the lottery, just not weigh it, and everybody has an equal chance for the top two picks, and that way.
That doesn't do it then.
What do you mean?
Remember, we had Houston in the lottery one year with 45 wins.
Right, but is that a bad thing, though? Like, right, if you add another good player to a team that's good, what's wrong with that?
I think that's not the policy behind the lottery and the draft. In other words, it's a bad thing if you believe that the purpose of a draft is to improve the weakest teams, because that's what we sell our fans.
Right.
And so that's why we sort of have played with the various lottery results. Change the format because if you are a fan of a team that's long suffering, you should feel that there's some relief coming in the way of the draft.
All right, devil's advocate though, if a team keeps just screwing up over and over again and picking bad players and doing dumb trades and just they're perennially terrible, do they get rewarded for that?
I know, but you know you. What we're selling here together is hope that, you know, that over a period of time, you know, fans will have something to cheer for and have hope for.
Well, it certainly worked with the Celtics because as they completely fell apart the last 3 months, nobody cared because we all wanted a chance at Oden or Durant. So I guess.
Yeah, I don't like that either, but, you know, I understand it. I understand it.
Well, while we're talking about rule changes, I wrote a column yesterday jumping on the bandwagon for the concept of playoff reseeding, which is a very radical idea. But I really don't see any downside other than the additional traveling. What's wrong with just abandoning the conferences and seeding it 1 through 16?
you're saying go to a balanced schedule.
No, not a balanced schedule. I'm saying keep the conferences during the regular season. Then the first and second seeds would be the top two winners of each conference. And then after that, it just goes by best win-loss record.
Because I'll have to get my mathematician, statistician, and actuaries going. But
right.
Remember, the way you got your record was by playing against your own conference.
Okay.
And so in a funny kind of a way, if you are in the East and it's perceived as very weak, but nevertheless you've run up a high record, why should you get a better seed than a team in the West that played mostly Western teams and didn't do quite as well?
That's a good point. I did not think of that. Well, let me throw this at you. With charter jets and all this stuff that we have now, I mean, in the old days, you know, you had the conferences because players were flying coach, and you know, you wanted to cut down on the travel by having teams play teams closer to them. Do you need that now? Do you need conferences?
That's a good question. I think that you know, I've spoken to a lot of sports folks, and I think the reason you want conferences is not because of travel, but because of building up rivalries.
Hmm.
I think I've seen 100 Yankee Red Sox games in the last 2 months.
Is that good or bad?
Well, it depends. That's because they're in the same league.
Yeah.
And Fox is stunting in order to be able to show that it has higher ratings.
Yeah, but do you, with the number of teams in the league and the amount of games, like, I don't feel like there are really any regular season rivalries that I care about. Like, maybe Suns-Mavs. Other than that,
and maybe we're not doing as good a job at that. But you know, 76ers-Celtics, thing of the past, but that's, you know, that's what we're trying to develop. Or Magic-Heat. You know,
yeah.
The Texas teams, as you try to develop, you know, or in the, you know, there are, you know, the Phoenix out there with L.A. It's interesting. I think that, you know, in some, I mean, I think there's a real split, let's say, in the NHL as to whether they should play even more in their conference and divisions, because you want to get a little bit more familiar with certain teams as they come in more and more.
Well, you mentioned the Sixers-Celtics. When I was a kid, we had less teams in the league, so they played six times during the season and then maybe another seven in the playoffs. So you felt like, you know, this was a real rivalry.
By the way, when you were a kid, and it wasn't that long ago, I'll bet you they played more than that during the regular season.
Yeah, well, I think even before the ABA merger, it was probably like, what, eight or nine times?
When I was a kid, I'll see your kid and up you one.
Right.
So there was an eight-team league. Playing a 78-game schedule.
Jeez.
Go figure it out. I mean, you saw them a lot, and maybe have been as much as a dozen. But even now, I think, I'm sitting here, I'm not sure. I think you could get five or six now. Let's say three and three at the max. And whereas in the team in the other conference, it's one and one, home and away.
Yeah.
And so, and as we've expanded, we've taken something away from the other divisions in your conference.
Well, do we have too many teams? I feel like we do. I feel like the league was at its strongest when it was around the 22 to 24 range. Do you ever see contraction being a possibility or no?
I don't think it's – based upon the economics of our existing teams, I don't think so.
What
does
that
mean? I would say to you – is I don't see expansion in any domestic sense. And I think you're right about one thing. The expansion, see, I would give you one and argue one. Expansion may have impacted rivalries.
Yep.
But over time, I'm not sure that it impacted, you know, people say, oh, it was diluted. But the reality is, when you look at the international contribution to our game, there are more people playing basketball in the U.S. than ever before, and the number of elite athletes coming into our game from outside the U.S. is extraordinary. One only needs to look at the Spurs to see what the impact of that is.
So I agree with you.
there's an unlimited number of players, but I think I haven't focused on it as much from a perspective of cutting down on sort of the sense of rivalries between teams that are enhanced, these rivalries, when you play each other more often.
I agree with you on that. I think the league was at its strongest when it had 23 teams, I think, and with all the international players, maybe you could go to 27. I still think 30 is too high.
We have 8 teams of international players, Bill. In other words, we have over 80 international players.
How many of them are good, though?
Well, I'm sitting here watching Ginobili and Parker. I don't know where you want to count the American Virgin Islands, so we'll give Tim Duncan, we'll call him neutral.
You can't count Jacques Vaughn, he's from America.
I'm looking at Pavlovich and Varejao. I'm looking at the MVP, a guy by the name of Nowitzki. I'm looking at Nash and Diaw. I mean, I tell you what, it's pretty good. I'm looking at, the Jazz and Mehmet Okur and Warriors, who played that terrific run with Pietras and the other big guy from Lithuania, who I'm forgetting now.
The agents.
So,
yeah.
It's fascinating to me. And now everyone's focusing on Durant and Oden, and the question is, how high is Yi going to go? And is this young man Splitter from Brazil, who's been a center, playing in
Greece,
Europe for several years now. He's 22. So I think you're going to see more and more very great players. I was in the elevator here in Cleveland. I met Tony Parker's brothers and Boris Diaw's brother, and they all play in Division I in France. So the onslaught continues. These American players better just keep working on their skills and get better.
So you're hoping that the talent pool grows into the number of teams, and you don't plan on expanding?
That's correct.
Okay, good. You took a ton of heat after the Stoudemire-Diaw suspensions. I actually agreed with your decision. I just thought the rule was dumb. Ever since, it ruined the Knicks' heat series in 97, I feel like it should have been tinkered in some way. But looking back, do you have any regrets about the way things were handled that week?
Well, I regret that we had to suspend them. I really do. Because you love to see the decisions made, on the basis of basketball and not on the basis of relative strength or weakness because of suspensions. But I don't know what else to say. The rule, Rudy Tomjanovich was a peacemaker. He was rushing with no intention of entering the fray. But Kermit Washington didn't know that. He just saw a player running at him.
Yep.
He turned around instinctively and almost killed him. And we'd like very much never to see that happen again. Our players understand it. Our coaching staffs understand it. And I think now our fans understand it.
Gotcha. Yeah,
and,
I mean...
And in a funny kind of a way, we feel a particular obligation because we don't want to give up the access that our fans have to the court. I sometimes smile when I see hordes of players rolling around in a baseball field in a bench-clearing brawl, or even hockey players. But the hockey players are behind glass, and the baseball players are safely out of harm's way on the mound or the home plate or wherever they're rolling around.
Yeah,
our guys, it runs the real risk of placing fans at risk, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, and it even has happened a couple of times. My problem with what happened was that I feel like the NBA nails these guys for these isolated incidents, and a lot of them are harmless, but you're interpreting the rule book. But you're not punishing some of them for repeatedly violating the integrity of the game. Like, for instance, the flopping that's going on right now, or Bruce Bowen, the way he's been tripping guys just repeatedly. Do you see a change in that?
I agree with you on flopping. Believe it or not, back in the All-Star game in Las Vegas at the competition committee meeting, I tried to drum up some support. We don't just enact rules. We have lots of guys who play the game that have opinions. And I really tried to drum up some support for punishing guys who flop.
And what happened?
I don't. It was like failed for want of a second. There was no great support for it. But I'm not letting it go, because I think what you wind up doing, and this is human nature, if a guy gets known as a flopper, then the referee thinks twice about giving him a call that he might deserve or not, because we're leaving it to the ref to enforce the rule.
Right.
And I think there's got to be a better way to potentially penalize players for flopping, albeit after the fact.
I think I should be on that committee. I think I should be the fans' representative. What do you think?
Well, you certainly...
Come on.
You certainly think you're knowledgeable. and I don't know anything to disprove that notion, so I'll see what I can do for you, Bill.
All right. If there's a spot, I don't want to force
it,
but if there's a spot. Let me ask you, the Spurs are going to sweep here probably. What was the single best team that you've seen in your 24 years as commissioner, in your opinion? Say the 86 Celtics, and I'll be happy. Oh, see, now you're doing the political thing where you don't want to pick a team because
No. You know what? I don't distinguish at this point in my aging brain. I'm trying to focus on, when I became commissioner, I just thought that the natural scheme of things in June was you went from Boston to L.A.
Yeah.
And watching the Celtics and the Lakers, I felt that there was very little to choose between in terms of how great they both teams were. But the Celtics used to keep getting, Scott Wedman or Bill Walton. They always added somebody that seemed to give them just an extra spark.
Yep.
I'm not ready to say. I'm not going to separate the. Although, let's face it, the Bulls did pretty well. They had a pretty good season in there someplace.
That was a very, very, very political answer, and exactly what I expected.
Okay, I'd go with. I'm Celtics Lakers. I'm going to flip a coin. Michael is transcendent, but those teams were Hall of Fame teams.
Yeah,
it's
I agree.
The whole starting lineup was ready for the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I don't know that we'll see that again anytime soon.
I have a couple of questions from readers for you. John Thayer from Phoenix asks, why can't you do something about the can noise that destroys the game environment in some of these NBA arenas? And I guess the point to accentuate this would be the Golden State crowds, where they didn't play any of that stuff. And I really thought those games were special. I don't know if you saw any of those games, but do we need this stuff? Do we need to trap the fans with the Jumbotron and the constant music?
It's so interesting that you say that. I mean, I agree with John, but I think we're a minority. I think that the surveys of the fans actually shows, believe it or not, that what you and I think, or John and I think, is just a lot of noise, is very well received. And maybe that entertainment is like number one or two on the list after the basketball for enhancing the fan experience. I was very surprised by the result of that poll. Our teams, do we need our eyelashes singed by fireworks? I don't know. I think you could tell the way I phrase it, but I sometimes worry that I'm not the demographic.
Right.
It isn't a bad thing to hear sneakers squeaking during a game. But you know what? To his credit, Mark Cuban tried it a few times, and the Mavericks fans said they didn't like it. He said, all right, Stern, I'm going to try it your way. And he shut things down. And the fans felt that it detracted from the entertainment experience. It doesn't detract from my entertainment experience, but I think that we're in a minority.
That's depressing. Brad from Wichita asks, instead of trying to market the game of basketball in Asia and other countries, why aren't you marketing the game more to portions of the country that are completely ignored right now? How hard is it to sell the game of basketball in Kansas or Kentucky or wherever else?
By the